Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The Action Network Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to the Action Network Podcast. Today, we have our UFC Fight Night betting preview. Santos v. Hill is your main event at UFC Apex in Las Vegas. We get to the main event, of course. We'll get there momentarily. Also coming up on the pod, which, by the way, when we do UFC, it's every Friday as the schedule plays out based on the schedule. We come and join you on Friday to get you ready for Saturday. Favorite underdog plays, fight of the night. Favorite props, we'll get a DFS breakdown and also best bets. Sean Zarillo, Billy Ward, the usual crew for this this show. Brendan Glasheen with you as well here on the Action Network Podcast. Let's dive right in. Hill Santos is our main event this week. Sean Zarillo, how are you? And of course, when we do this, we don't just talk about who we like to pick on the money line. There's an angle to this. So what's the angle on the main event for the best betting angle?
Yeah, I would lean to Hill on the money line around minus 300, even as a big favorite. I view him as the better fighter on the feet, 7 years younger, better cardio, taller, longer, probably hits harder. And he's the natural light heavyweight where Santos used to compete at 185, where he did his best work, has not looked like his former self since returning from double knee surgery after fighting John Jones. He still is durable. He has not been KO'd since 2018, but he also hasn't scored a finish of his own in a while either. And he has been much less aggressive since coming back from injury as well, seeming very tepid, unwilling to engage, particularly in the pocket, staying on the outside of the cage, moving around. Easy to take down. Do not expect Hill to take him down. Hill has also shown some grappling deficiencies of his own, has arm snapped by Paul Craig, has been proven to be able to be taken down in the past. Do not really see Santos wrestling him, but that probably is Santos's best path to victory, is to probably grapple offensively, because I think that's where Jamal Hill has his biggest weakness. But I think eventually Hill takes over with cardio, can gas him out with pressure, can overwhelm him with pressure. Curious to see how Hill approaches the fight, if he's just going to kind of force the issue and swing wildly and try to get another early finish, because he's had a number of early finishes, especially of late. But he's proven that he can go 3 rounds, he can go 5 rounds, he can rack up 100 significant strikes in 3 rounds. So I think he eventually takes over this fight to a pretty significant degree, especially late. But based on how he's been fighting of late, he may just come out quickly and try to score a knockout. So the way that I'm betting this, the way I see value, is the overs, the over 1.5, 2.5, maybe even the fight to go to decision around plus 300. I projected that at about plus 250, so slight value there. And also Hill by decision at around 5-1, 6-1. I would make that line closer to plus 400. So would bet the overs and the Hill by decision props if I'm playing this fight. I'm still not sure 100% how I'm playing it, because Hill, as I mentioned, could just kind of come out and force the issue and create a brawl and force one of them to get knocked out rather quickly. So definitely tepid just based on how Hill might approach this fight, especially coming off of a string of early knockouts. But I think the value side is in the overs and in the fight to go longer.
Santos on the money line is plus 250. MMA analyst at Action Network, former MMA fighter Billy Ward here as well. Billy, how are you playing the main event?
Yeah, I'm seeing it a little bit differently than Sean, but kind of along the same lines. I just think with it being a five-round fight, I have a really hard time seeing this one go all five rounds. I think Hill gets it done before that. And it's just a way better line. Hill by TKO is minus 140. There's almost zero chance he submits him or submits anyone. So if you're going to play inside the distance, you might as well get the better price on the knockout, and that's minus 140. I'm mostly with Sean. I think, like, it's likelier to happen late. You know, Santos has been complaining a little bit about some of his opponents not wanting to get in fist fights with him and not wanting to strike back and forth. So I think Santos is going to be bringing it forward a little bit. I don't think he's going to try to offensively wrestle. With that said, every fighter says that every time, how they just want to stand and bang. If he's smart, he wouldn't actually do that against Hill. But I really think Hill has the best striking in the division, or at least the best boxing. And, you know, he's a really good counter striker. So if Santos is really coming forward, I think he eventually finds him and puts him out late. So, yeah, I don't hate the over 1.5, over 2.5, but I think Hill finishes him a little bit later on to this fight. And minus 140 for his TKO line, I think if he wins it, it's, you know, 80, 90% chance that he wins it by knockout. So that's why I'm playing.
Yeah, I was thinking Hill like round 3, 4, 5, which is why those 1.5s, those 2.5s were interesting to me. But I'm kind of like scared to play the go to the decision, to play Hill by decision at bigger plus numbers. So maybe the over 1.5 at juice minus 150 or so is the best way to play it for me.
Okay, scanning the card. And we also keep our eyes on the prelims for those of you new to the podcast when we break down UFC. So we go through the whole card. In this case, all 12 fights. Favorite underdog play, Zerillo.
Yeah, this is an awful card. I'm actually not going to be playing a lot of money lines. I'm mostly going to be playing totals. The one underdog at a juicy number who I think is the best chance of winning is Jason Witt around plus 200. He should be winning more minutes here against the Contender Series debutant and Josh Quinlan. Quinlan, undefeated amateurs professionally, 100% knockout rate, but definitely a guy you can wrestle, get on top of. He's been able to reverse positions against lesser grapplers, scramble back to his feet. Witt has pretty good top control, and he does a lot of damage from top two. So if Witt just grapples immediately, which he should, I think he can get takedowns and certainly win minutes here. The problem is he may have the worst chin in the UFC. This guy, every time you touch his chin, just goes on chicken legs, looks like he's on skates. So he may be winning this fight up until the moment he loses. He may get an early takedown. Quinlan gets back up, hits him once, and the fight's over. He may even win the first two rounds and then can't get a takedown in the third because he's tired and get knocked down with the first punch that lands clean. So Quinlan is taller, has the reach advantage. He's the better striker, and I think he has solid takedown defense, but I do like Witt's wrestling. I can certainly see Witt winning this fight, but probably my preferred way to play this fight is just to bet the under 2.5 rounds at minus 170. The fight doesn't go to a decision at minus 200. I could see Witt ground and pounding him to a win. Could see him getting a submission on the mat, or most likely Quinlan just connects once and knocks him out of the feet.
I'm happy Zerillo got that in there. I was curious when he'd mentioned that some of these money lines are really ugly on this card. So we got that. We got to that eventually. So that's good. Billy, how about yourself? Favorite underdog play?
Real quick, I do really like Sean's take. Just wanted to mention, Quinlan was suspended for testing positive for a banned substance after his Contender Series bout. And, you know, having fought in some regional scenes before, not all these states are really good about testing for that. So when you see a guy test positive the very first time he fights on a Zuffa-owned promotion, that raises some red flags for me. So, you know, whether he was using stuff the whole time or it was truly just, you know, the tainted supplement that everybody says, I don't know. But that's another, like, point towards Witt, I think. When a guy, the first time he probably faced a real strenuous drug test, immediately failed it and was suspended for 9 months. So, but yeah, anyway, moving on. My favorite underdog is Miranda Granger. She's at plus 185 on MGM is the best line. Now, this will be her first fight back after having a kid. And we talked about this a little bit. The records of women fighters who carried their babies coming back is really not as bad as I thought it would have been. I looked up a few. You know, when they come back too quickly, that seems to be more of an issue. But she's had a pretty good layoff in here. And she just has a really good matchup against Cory McKenna. McKenna's 1-1 in the UFC. She lost to Elise Reed, who's not great, and then beat Kay Hansen, who doesn't really seem to be much of a fighter and was cut shortly thereafter that. So neither of those are impressive. You know, Granger's only 1-2, but she fought way tougher competition. She has a, somehow has a 10-inch reach advantage against McKenna in this one, which I can't recall ever seeing, especially with people that short. So she should get the better of the striking exchanges. And then it's just another one where if we've got a female fight, highly likely to go to a decision, going to be kind of low level, that's when I want the plus money. So at plus 185 or so, that's the best line still out there. That's one, if you're listening, I would get to right away because she's been dropping throughout the week with MGM being a little bit of an outlier and not having moved it down yet.
Okay, the fight of the night that Sean and Billy want to discuss, Luque v. Neal. Luque on the money line, minus 180. Neal is at plus 155. That is a welterweight matchup. Again, these fights are, it's not pay-per-view. It's on ESPN or ESPN Plus. It varies. So just keep an eye on the schedule. But yes, Luque, Neal, Sean Zarello, again, like you kind of said, you kind of adhere to this in the underdog discussion. You might be playing totals more so than you will money lines. So is that kind of the same way you'll go about this?
Yeah, I like this fight to go to a decision and plus money. Both of these guys, very durable. Do not see any submission threat from Jeff Neal. Can expect him not to get knocked out by Vicente Luque. Luque should be trying to pressure a lot, but Neal tends to back up, be very low volume, tends to try to get his fights to a slow-paced affair where he is the guy with bigger power. He's probably going to lose on volume, may end up landing the biggest shot of the round and flipping it in his favor. So I think the margins here should be pretty close, even though I expect Luque to be more aggressive, to land more volume throughout the course of the fight. But the fact that Neal is a southpaw may take away some of Luque's best weapons. We are getting southpaw versus orthodox in this matchup. So he's not going to be able to kick the leg as easily, not going to be able to land his left hook as easily. I do trust him to be more active, would expect Luque to win more minutes, as I said, but this should be a competitive fight. Likely goes to decision more often than not. I think I made it about 53%, so minus 115, and you can get a plus 125 on that number. So the over 2.5 fight to go to decision, and then either fighter to win by decision in the prop market as well. I think you can find value on either of their decision props. I know some of our Action Network contributors are taking a shot on Neal by decision at 4-1. I think it's going to be a razor close decision if it gets to the scorecard. So just the GTD for me at plus money. I'll probably end up skipping the fighter to win by decision props.
And one of those daring people is Billy Ward. Explain yourself.
Yeah, I mean, Sean pretty much laid out everything that I was looking at too in the same way. The only thing I will say is Luque has never been finished in the UFC, but he's 1-4 in fights that go to a decision. So, you know, I don't know how like sustainable that is or whether it's a feature of judging or just how he fights doesn't play well to the judges. But, you know, 20% win rate when the fights go to a decision isn't great. And then Neal also has a better track record against their two common opponents. He beat Bilal Muhammad, who Luque lost to. And then Neal got a faster finish against Nico Price. You know, I don't love the whole MMA math thing, but I think there's an angle to him being better longer in a fight where Luque probably has the better quick stoppage odds as the more aggressive fighter. So if I'm going to play it, I'll just take the 4-1 odds, lay like half a unit on it, and, you know, hope Neal gets the decision. And it's probably, if it goes to a decision, people are going to complain on either side. So I want the longer ticket when it's one that we're going to be whining about, you know.
Let's go to props. That's next here on the Action Network podcast, UFC betting preview, UFC fight night, main event, Santos and Hill in Las Vegas. Zarillo, where are we looking in the prop market?
Yeah, I like Sergey Spivak on the money line. I also like Brian Battle on the money line. I'm probably going to parlay those two guys up. But in terms of prop bets, Spivak inside the distance at minus 120 may be the best way to play him. Also, that fight to end inside the distance at about minus 200. We'll get to a similar way. I'm playing my best bets as well, just for a different fight, but basically the same bets. Fighter to win inside the distance, fight to end inside the distance at roughly similar prices too, minus 120, about minus 170, minus 200. On the fight to end inside the distance. I like Spivak in this matchup in a heavyweight fight, even as a big favorite, because he's reliable to shoot takedowns. He has all the grappling upside here, not something you typically see from a heavyweight, but he is aggressive in pursuit of his takedowns, shoots over 5 or 6 per 15 minutes, lands more than 3, 60% accuracy. He's really good at getting them from clinch positions too, which is where Sakai likes to fight in close from that Muay Thai clinch. So I certainly see Spivak getting into that clinch and getting trip takedowns from there. Sky got outgrappled by a kickboxer and Alistair Overeem, taken down multiple times. I expect Spivak to be able to take him down. And when he does get the fight to the mat, I expect him to be able to keep it there too. Sakai not good at getting off of his back, tends to throw strikes and close his guard rather than trying to get back up and progress position. So with heavyweights on top of you, it's harder to get back up in general, but it's really hard to get back up when you're not trying to get up. I think this fight could be competitive on the feet as well. I don't necessarily see Sakai having some huge advantage in the striking. So competitive on the feet, all the grappling upside towards the Spivak side. I think he gets on top and either finds a submission or pounds Sakai out from mount. So Spivak inside the distance, minus 120, fight to end inside the distance, around minus 200. I think you could play either. You could play both. I'll probably end up playing both.
Billy, props. What do you like?
Yeah, well, I really like it's really hard to get up if you don't try to, which is it's one of those weird truisms. But yeah, I'm looking at the female fight between Priscilla Cachoeira and Ariane Lipsky. Cachoeira is nicknamed Zombie Girl because she kind of just walks forward Korean zombie style, just taking punches to the head. She eats almost 8 significant strikes per minute in her fight. And she's seen 3 of her last 4 go end inside the distance. So has Lipsky. So I'm targeting the under 2.5. I just think Cachoeira's style kind of makes it so either she gets finished or her opponent does. She's just going to walk forward until somebody dies. And I prefer the under 2.5. It's plus 155. You can get plus 120 that it ends inside the distance, but the odds of the stoppage happening in the last 2.5 minutes are probably not as high as that line would imply if you break down the implied odds. You tend to see more finishes early than late as fighters tire out. So yeah, you know, I usually don't like betting female fights to end inside the distance or end early. But, you know, someone nicknamed the Zombie Girl fighting against a Muay Thai fighter who tends to get finished on the ground is kind of a perfect recipe for this one to end fast.
Okay, always when we do this show on Action Network Podcast as we get a little DFS breakdown. I admit I am recording today in Connecticut, so I can't pull up the contest, Billy. It's so freaking annoying. I always forget about that part. Give it to me because I don't have the salaries and I can't pull them up because you can't do that stuff here in Connecticut.
Yeah, I actually would rather not be looking at these salaries myself. This is just a terrible, it's a terrible DFS slate because there's a bunch of, you know, really wide money lines as we've talked about. And all those fighters are really appealing. You know, Mikhail Olajechuk, really want to get him in there. Really want to get Terrence McKinney in there. Spivak, who Sean just mentioned. Obviously, Jamal Hill. Like, these guys are all close to or above 9,000. And I just don't really see any underdogs that I, or cheap underdogs, that I really like for GPP. So, you know, one of these cheap fighters is going to probably shock everyone, and that's going to be the one you need. But I don't have the slightest clue who it is this time. I'm just going to mix and match, you know, 2 or 3 of those expensive fighters, try to let the Fantasy Labs optimizer do the work and mix in some of those cheaper fighters. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky on those. I'm going to take a stand. I don't want any Santos. But even the other three, like, could Augusto Sakai pull a knockout out of somewhere? Maybe. I don't know. Crazier things have happened. So that's what we're looking at. You know, it's not a bad cash game slate.
Okay.
I think there's some of the cheaper female fighters are in good spots. You know, we just talked about Miranda Granger, who's only 7,100. Don't love her for GPPs. Don't think she puts up a big score there. So, yeah, outside of that, like I said, this is one where I'm not trying to get too deep into specific fighters. I'm just going to block off the fighters I don't like and let the optimizer do the work.
Yeah, I'm like half kidding. I know we could pull up the optimizer, but it's more for effect. But yeah, I mean, being in Connecticut, I can't even open up the thing. So anything to add there, Zarrillo, before we go to best bets?
This is somehow a worse DFS slate than it is a betting slate. I agree completely with Billy. Like, none of these underdogs are appealing. Since he brought up Terrence McKinney, the one thing I will say, McKinney is about as aggressive as a fighter as you will ever see. Tends to get his guys out of there early, but if he doesn't, he can gas out big time. So Eric Gonzalez, 6,700 on DK live after round one. That's going to be pretty appealing. You may get like 15-1 on this guy after McKinney maybe 10-8s him in the first round. So look for Eric Gonzalez to potentially steal a comeback in the second or third round if he can survive the opening frame live after round one on Gonzalez, I think is an appealing play.
Okay, before we wrap, as we always do, best bets for UFC fight night. And we're going to start with Zarrillo. What do you got?
Yeah, I mentioned, you know, how I'm betting a fight, this feedback fight in the top prop section. I'm betting the Mikhail Oleksaychuk versus Sam Alvey fight in pretty much the exact same way. Mikhail inside the distance at minus 120, fight to end inside the distance at minus 170. I think this is actually pretty good matchmaking. Now, Alvey is 36 years old on 0-7-1 in his past 8 UFC fights, probably getting cut here, even if he manages to win. But McCall pressures a ton, and Alvey prefers to be on the back foot and counter. So it's actually very good matchmaking from a violence perspective, because Oleksaychuk's going to look to swarm him, pressure him, especially in the small cage. Alvey's going to look to move backwards and land one huge left hand. Oleksaychuk does a really good at keeping a high, tight guard, even when he's moving forward. He's very good at moving his head as well, defends strikes at 64%. I would imagine his head strike defense is probably even higher because he's very easy to kick and hit to the body, but not as easy to hit upstairs. Alvey, 50-plus pro fights, definitely on the downside of his career, knocked out by Brendan Allen in his past fight. And what I really don't like, or from a violence perspective, but what I really do like, is that both guys are cutting to 185 here. Alvey's gone back and forth between middleweight, light heavyweight. Going back down to 185 at 36 years old is a recipe for disaster. Oleksaychuk looks like he always should have been fighting at middleweight as opposed to light heavyweight. He was very small for light heavyweight. So I think this certainly favors him going back down to 185. He should be the faster man, should be the stronger man. And Alvey may just be a little more zapped than he has been fighting at light heavyweight. So I expect Oleksaychuk to knock him out, like his knockout prop, like his inside the distance prop. I would consider his round one prop at plus 200, but I actually may even prefer to all of those, the under 1.5 at plus money, as opposed to laying the minus 120 on his ITD prop. Tends to finish his fights earlier if he's going to finish them. And he doesn't have the best gas tank even at light heavyweight. So moving down another weight class, probably is 5-7 minutes of cardio. That's when I would expect him to have the highest chance of putting Alvey away. You can get plus money on that under 1.5. That may be the best way to play it. But his ITD odds at minus 120, the fight to end inside the distance at minus 170. I think those are all fine ways to play this fight.
Okay, Billy, take us home. Best bet for UFC fight night.
Yeah, Sean referenced it a little bit, but I'm actually seeing the Terrence McKinney fight a little bit differently. So I'm going to set this up for you guys a little bit. He's had 3 fights in the UFC. I believe 2 of them were on short notice. He has 2 wins, both in under 2 minutes and 11 seconds. Then he comes out against Drew Dober, looks awesome early on, drops Dober, but then totally just gasses out, ends up losing the fight, gets knocked out 3.5 minutes in. If I'm Terrence McKinney's camp or his team, or even McKinney himself, I'm thinking that we need to get him some cage time. We need to get him, you know, practice at a measured pace, have him lasting longer in a fight. But when are you going to do that? You're not going to do that in a tough fight against Drew Dober. You're going to do it against Eric Gonzalez, who's 0-1 in the UFC and got knocked out by millionaire-old Jim Miller in his debut. This is a pretty non-threatening matchup for McKinney, I think. So I expect them to come out and just try to build some cage time. If this hits the second round, that's going to be more time than he spent in a UFC octagon in his previous 3 fights. And the best way I can see to bet that is the fight to start round 2 is plus 130. I have a suspicion that his camp is going to tell him, hey, let's win round 1, like, you know, touch him up, win some minutes, and then round 2 kind of unleash him once we've worn him down a little bit. You know, it's hard to say because I don't know what they're thinking. I know that's what I would do if I were in McKinney's camp, and he just needs to build some endurance up a little bit there, get some experience in a fight that he doesn't win in 12 seconds. So at plus money, I think that's probably likelier than not to happen. It's also just crazy to see a guy who's favored to win a fight inside round 1. So anytime I can bet against that, I'm going to do it at plus money.
Excellent stuff as always, fellas. Again, this is not pay-per-view this week. You can find these fights on ESPN, ESPN Plus. That's going to do it for the Action Network podcast UFC betting preview. It's UFC Fight Night. Santos v. Hill goes down Saturday at UFC Apex in Las Vegas. For Sean Zarillo, Billy Ward, Brendan Glasheen, we will join you all again next week. We join you every Friday as the schedule works itself out and get you ready for Saturday. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.